Floating format tonight. Next hour, Stephen Bassett joins us for a couple hours as we talk about UFO disclosure. I also want to get Stephen's reaction to the Lonnie Zamora death. He was the police officer in Scirocco, New Mexico, who passed away, but years ago had one of the most incredible UFO sightings ever recorded, ever. It's just one of the best. And we'll be talking with Steve Bassett about that. Open lines when I come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Don't forget the program Friday night will originate from our affiliate in Chicago, WLS. And then Saturday, I will be hosting the National Radio Hall of Fame Awards with all kinds of incredible talent there. And three major awards and three posthumous awards as well to some great, great broadcasters. And last year, we had the honor of having Art Bell nominated and awarded one of the National Hall of Fame Awards. And what a great honor that was for Art, and just very rewarding for him. Let's go to the phones this hour. We'll pick it up by going to you, Greg, in southern area of Georgia. Whereabouts in Georgia, Greg?
Just north of Tallahassee, George.
There you are. What's up?
Well, I kind of agree with you on the formation of the moon, because everything that I have learned was that the moon itself, or the moon was a larger entity, and the Earth was a much smaller entity. And during the formation of the planets, when they were still molten, they hadn't quite cooled down to what they were, there was a collision, and as a result, the moon gave a lot of its mass to Earth, which made it larger, mm-hmm. and the moon became smaller and was then captured by the larger spinning Earth and remained in our orbit. And it was much closer. In fact, the moon is moving away. So over the millennia, the moon is moving further and further away every year.
Well, and you know, we were so lucky to have the moon where it is now, because, you know, had it been out of place, some things couldn't be going on the way they're happening on this planet right now.
Well, they probably wouldn't even be life on this planet if it wasn't
for
the
moon. That could be. You may be right.
It regulated the oceans. Otherwise, we'd have these oceans that would have, constant, what are they called, tsunamis. You know, it would be storms and things like we would never could never imagine. But I just want to tell you, I was watching a program the other night, and you were on it, and it was...
Must have been Ancient Aliens on the History Channel?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was. Absolutely. And I had to tell you, I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoy your program, because I used to listen to you when I used to work the midnight shift. I'm a retired policeman.
Uh-huh.
And when I was driving around in the midnight shift, I would always, listen to the talk radio, and your show was always on from 1 to, 3 in the morning, so it was something to keep me awake while I was riding around.
Greg, I've got to ask you this. Police officers in San Jose, California will be the very first in the country to have miniature digital cameras integrated into their uniforms, so that when somebody files some complaint, let's say, against an officer, you'll have the video there for you to watch.
Well, it also works the other way, George, and I'm sure that they sold it to the police officers that you could use this to protect yourself, whereas the administration is probably going to use it to screw them, I'm telling you.
I know, it does go both ways. How would you react if they came up to you and said, we're going to put a little camera, Greg, on your uniform?
That's very close to that, because I was in the South Florida where I was a police officer, and when the COPS program first started, they came to our department, and I was asked to be on that program, and I said no, because I didn't want no cameras following me around.
Well,
because
I
you never say
me.
You say something out of whack or something, you lose your temper and you could lose your job.
I've got a lot of great friends who are police officers, and a few of them here in St. Louis. And one of them was telling me just a few weeks ago, he said, the biggest problem with cameras, and right now most of them are in the police car, just overlooking what's going on, or video cameras when some guy walks by some kind of situation. He said,
right.
The worst thing about the cameras, they have truly stopped good police officers from doing what they need to do. And he said, George, you don't understand what it's like. If you're out there in the dark and there's a guy that may have a gun, appears to have a gun, and you got to hold him down, you got to put cuffs on him, he's swinging at you, he's trying to kill you, you don't know what he's got. He said, you got to use force sometimes. And he said, yes, it is true. Some police officers have used excessive force. And sometimes too many police officers have jumped in and used excessive force. But he said, overall, officers are out there to do their job, save their lives, save your lives. And when there are cameras around, they're going to be tentative. And if they are, they could get killed. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, 100%. No, we had a saying on the police department, I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6.
That's exactly what he said, Greg. Same thing.
I just got to tell you, my father was a homicide detective in New York City. So, and my uncle was a sergeant on the New York City Police Department. So, I come from a family background of law enforcement. And every generation basically says the same thing. Police work... crime was much less in the 40s and 50s because the cops were much rougher.
That's true.
And as everybody started getting concerned with more and more with human rights and sensitivity and all this other stuff, crime has gone up because you've taken the ability of the police officer to suppress it. It's a trade-off.
Absolutely. And if you're in a car, let's say if you get stopped by a police officer, And you're coming up to the person, right? And all of a sudden you see that person jump out of his car. He's supposed to sit there with his hands on top of the wheel. But if he jumps out of the car, you're going to be ready. You're going to bolt back. You might even have to pull your gun on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, that's just not a normal reaction. A person who does that is either high on drugs or completely stupid or maybe it's a mental case. I mean, the rational person is not going to do anything that's going to cause a police officer to want to protect himself, because the first thing he goes for, it's not his nightstick, it's not for the mace, it's for his gun.
Absolutely. He's got to protect himself. Greg, thanks for the call. Next up, Sun Valley, California. Henry's on the wild card line. Hey, Henry, welcome.
Hi, George. I just wanted to talk to you with this hour about North Korea.
Yeah, okay.
Well, they've been doing a lot of stuff lately. I'm pretty sure they can understand that, they have the nuclear bomb now and
in
the league. One of the things that I want to say is that for some time now, we've known that North Korea has prison camps. And these are, quite atrocious places. If people want to do the research and they're ignorant about it, they can read about all the things that go on there. I don't probably need to name them per verbatim because they're very bad. But the fact that the Western world knows about these places, and let's just say, takes operations into North Korea. I don't think that, me personally, knowing how the world powers are being, I would think that they would be more likely to bomb and destroy those things. So in order to help collaborate, a hiding of evidence, or collaboration, especially in light of certain guests that we've had, portray, certain scenarios to us, I think that would probably be the most likely thing, because these camps, you can see them on Google. And, what do you really hear about them? I'm pretty sure those journalists going into North Korea that got, apprehended at the border, held.
Yes, yes.
And,
the ones that Clinton had to go and get out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
People know about these things and have been trying to discover more about them, but especially... the Yalu River and the people trying to cross, especially during these winter months, conditions there are pretty harsh and whatnot. I was going through basic training in 2006 when they detonated their first device. And you kind of are limited on how much news you're given, but that was the main thing that they fed to us, that they had the fissionable device.
Oh, yeah, they've got it. And the big question now, Henry, is do they have the capability to launch these at a long distance? And they're getting better all the time.
I actually had a theory about their missile program development, in that I believe that they're using certain types of what you would consider low-grade missiles and failures to work up to a macroscopic project that we have not yet been able to label. It would be, they're kind of like Da Vinci Works, they're Skunk Works.
Yes.
That they have a front, that looks like these components are just duds, but they will have a threshold, what they were working for, some project within that that we can't fathom, that they're working for a homogeneous collaborative system that, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist, but, you take the components from that and develop something completely new, probably, that, you know, we on the outside world can't find out about yet.
And Henry, paint a picture for me 20 years from now. If Iran has nukes, we know North Korea has nukes. Let's say Venezuela with Hugo Chavez and company, they get nukes. Paint me a picture 20 years from now.
Well,
how dangerous is it?
I really hate to be the optimist about this, but...
Is there optimism here?
Oh, yeah. In 20 years, I could honestly say that I believe the fissional device, the fusion-fission war, will probably result in some sort of device that can make the refinement process very difficult. Probably something with quantum probability that if they catch a centrifuge going up into action, you can preempt the nuclear fission. You know, this is, you know, kind of Star Trek-y, I know. You know, coast to coast is one of those places out there. But 20 years, you know, you can go from the 40s to the moon, you know, in 20 years amount of time. So
absolutely. That sounds like a pretty good thought.
The only thing that I was going to say is in that time frame, I really wonder why Seoul has not repositioned itself or places other nations that, you know, face such, conflict all the time. And, you know, they have enough available landmass that they could probably have begun to in previous decades. But I think one of the things is that, you know, you got to keep the families together. There's the strong ties. You know, it's very similar to the Middle Eastern situation in which the Palestinians, you know, are separated with Israel and there's physical barriers. And, you know, I'm Asian myself. So, you know, I can understand the needs for families and a community of Korea.
Well, you're very perceptive, though, on North Korea. And it could be a tinderbox sooner than later. Henry, thanks for the call. Next up, we go to Michael in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I wanted to comment on the economy. Excuse me, continuing
sure.
on last night with Mr. Hewitt. You know,
I loved him. What'd you think of him?
Oh, well, I've known him since 91. He's was very much on the credit problems back then. He's spot on today. And
he sure is.
He just calls it like it is. And that was a great interview. And I was going to comment something that you didn't get a chance to get into yesterday, and he, you know, didn't have time to. But, you know, we've gone, you know, in the early 80s, we went from Friedman economics, which is, you know, then to free trade, which and then to globalization and deregulation, and each step encroaching upon the domestic workforce as well as domestic-based businesses. And it blew up in their face. Greenspan said it in a congressional hearing that knows the theory failed. And what we've got now is we have the Obama administration running up deficits and taxes to prop up the same broken system and now calling 12% unemployment, shrinking tax base, the new normalcy. I know you've heard of that.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, and it goes up. It's back to that, you know, that young lady who wrote that book on disaster capitalism. These people are setting us up again. Just a couple of statistics of the, you know, the $750 billion bailout for the banks.
Mm-hmm.
$850 million went to 150 people. That was reported on the Rick Elderman program.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And another $100 million was rewarded to one Citigroup executive. One Citigroup executive. And they've got, you know, government workers out on the porches of everyone on unemployment or welfare. What are you doing with every dime? But when President Obama went to speak to the Wall Street crew. He had a speech there. They walked away saying, this was a sermon and a lecture, and how dare this president, lecture us on how we should do our business. And, I mean, the contempt is still there. Nothing has changed. Now that the auto companies, they're continued to be gloated. Now, buffoons, clumsy bears that can't, make a car that America wants without, cash for cookies, But the thing is now that they've tapped that out, we'll see this, winter season, December, Christmas. And
this will be very interesting.
And they're already declaring victory. They've already said, the recession's over. We've won. The Great Denial. We've gone from the Great Recession to the Great Denial. And so I just think that, you know, and I'm not, you know, I've just talked to people in different businesses and you know, that they have no political affiliations and they're saying this is bad.
Michael, I talked to a CEO a few weeks ago and he said break even is the new word for a profitable year.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. If you're lucky, absolutely. Hey, by the way, congratulations to the New York Yankees, World Series champs. Again, the Yankees just keep putting away great, great series. The Yankees and the Philadelphia Phillies, two superb teams. The Yankees win it this year. And, you know, that's baseball for the history books again. Now they move on to football and all the other sports out there. But, again, congratulations. They're jumping for joy in New York these days. Let's go to Massachusetts. Hey, Chris, your Red Sox didn't make it, unfortunately.
Well, you know, we tried, George. We, you know, we got a couple wins since in the last, 100 years or so.
Yep.
We're going to do okay. But good luck to the Yankees. Next year, we're coming at them. talking about the economy, George, imagine an infinite number of bad economies. I don't know if you're familiar with the Raelian cosmology theory. Have you ever heard of this?
Oh yeah, the Raelians, of course. Sure thing.
Well, I thought, I'm 28 years old, and I've always pondered on this theory, not the really the Raelian cosmology, if people are not familiar with it. It's about aliens that came down and told them a theory of where, like, our universe is, cosmology, mm-hmm. what our universe is about. I don't know about the alien part, but something is very, very interesting in this theory where, if I read it, it says, our observable universe is an atom of a much larger level of matter and possibly organism. It is also stated in Ray's book that atoms of our atoms, or subatomic particles in our bodies, also possess universes like our own, but on a much smaller scale. The pattern, atom within universe within atom, is believed to be infinitely repetitive from the infinitely small to the infinitely large. So what that's really saying is that each atom inside us humans or any living organism is a universe. And in that universe, there's living creatures that have atoms in them that, you know what I'm saying?
I have long suspected, Chris,
that
you know, we could be, for example, a flea on some dog's back.
That has to be what it is, George.
I hope nobody scratches him. We're in trouble.
Well, people like say, well, where does the universe end? I mean, it cannot just end. It has to be something after it. So if you think about, figure a little, small, tiny, tiny spaceship, an alien spaceship in an atom.
Yes.
And it can go forever. It leaves that atom, and it enters another atom, and it, you know, and it just keeps, it's like infinite.
I used to think about that all the time, that, you know, it just, and in terms of size, things even get bigger as well. And we're just a very little small part of that whole picture. I'll be back in a moment. More open lines continue on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. By the way, thank you to so many of you who submitted stories for our latest book, Journey to the Light. Magnificent stories, just absolutely incredible about ghosts and angels and intuition that went into the compilation of Journey to the Light with Bill Burns. And the book comes out November 10th. It's available now on Amazon.com for order, and then hits the bookstores November 10th. And you'll be fascinated with the stories that so many Coast to Coast listeners sent us, well over several thousand stories, of which we had to compile down to a few number to make the book. But the Journey to the Light, it's out there November 10th. Thank you. Back at you now with open lines and its first-time caller, Russell in Pennsylvania. Russell, how are you?
Hey, George, how's it going?
Okay, all well.
Yeah, I have a interesting story about shadow people.
What happened?
Well, a buddy of mine, who I've known since basically first grade, so he doesn't really have any reason to lie to me.
Okay.
He went up to a place in Springtown, PA. Have you heard of it? Anywhere in Springtown?
No. Tell me more.
Well, there was a building up in Springtown. There's a whole bunch of stories about the building. It's it's a burnt down farmstead, and a family was there while the father was out, and he was on business or something of another, and the house caught on fire. And, you know, one thing led to another, and he was speeding back on a road, and this is a one-lane dirt road to his house in the snow. And, you know, the worst thing could have happened, and he got into an accident and died.
Oh, my God.
You know, while the whole family perished in the fire. So it's nothing but tragedy down there. And my one friend decided, well, hey, it's going to be, it has to be haunted, so I'm going to go down there and check it out. He goes down there, and he gets a friend to drop him off, and the friend would not get out of the car.
And the friend was smart.
Yeah, right? And he gets about halfway up the driveway when all goes quiet. Not a cricket, not a bird, on a full moon nonetheless. And he gets this weird feeling and decides, hey, maybe I should just turn around. He turns around, and he's in the middle of the woods. The next thing he sees is a shape, like a shadow person, right next to him. He gets this terrible feeling. And from what he told me, the shadow person asked where I was.
Where you were?
Yeah. He asked why I wasn't there with him. And the next thing he knows, he's already at the car. And the person in the car kept asking him what happened. And of course, he didn't remember anything. And a few weeks down the line, he goes, hey, Russ, you got to come up and see this place. And, you know, silly me, decides to go up and check it out the next week. So we take a whole bunch of, we take just me, him, and another person and drive us up there again. And, you know, I was a little skeptical of this, but I went up. Nothing crazy happened, but I did get this feeling, like this terrible feeling of, like, loss. And it was disturbing. And after I left, I did not feel very good at all.
Why would this shadow being ask about you? That's weird.
You know, a lot of people say that it's haunted by some, because apparently there was a lot of Wiccan rituals going on there. You know, it might have been people torturing the poor souls of the family there, you know, doing some kind of nasty witchcraft and all that bad stuff.
Maybe, and maybe it thought you could help. I don't know.
Maybe, you know, you never know. But other than that, I heard that there was a few bad spirits up there. Maybe Shadow Person is just very angry that people have been doing stuff to his family. Maybe it's
his
father.
It could be. And what a sad story that was. My gosh, he's racing up to try to get to his house. It's burning. His family's inside, and he dies in a car crash. Doesn't get any worse than that. Stanton, Virginia. Vince, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Vince.
Hey, George. Two things. Discussing being, our universe being infinitely small and the formation of our moon. First, being infinitely small, I've pondered that as well for years. And I've pondered the idea that we are one cell in the very mind of God.
You never know.
Being infinitely small, our whole universe, all we know is just one cell inside of the very mind of God.
And I once saw there was a animated film in school once, and you zoomed in, and you zoomed out. You know, you showed the city and the town, and then you kept coming out farther and farther and farther. But you realized that you were on, you know, some little globe that was on something else, that was on something else. It goes on forever.
It was like the Twilight Zone episode where the spacemen think they're big until they get stranded on a planet where they're infinitely small.
Absolutely. And the lady chased them with a broom or something.
Right, right. Well, yeah. And as far as the moon, I think NASA has retrieved clay from the moon, the same clay that is on Earth, red clay.
That's interesting. I'd have to check into that. I can't recall that.
I think it was on their boots. It was on Armstrong's boots. And okay. He said, "What's this on my boots?" And they brought it back, and it's actually clay from Earth.
Which tells you that the moon probably came from Earth.
Right. They think that in the very beginning, when the Earth was still maybe even close to gas or liquid state, an asteroid, a huge asteroid, hit the Earth, and the particles of clay and rock formed the moon. And it's actually not even solid, but more, it's like a shell, like a skull.
Can you imagine, Vince, what that would have looked like watching this thing, whatever it was, whether it was a huge asteroid or another planet that smashes into the planet?
Incredible.
Oh, and, my gosh.
And as far as ice ages, I think that ice ages are brought on by the same type of collision, just not as big. When an asteroid hits the Earth, especially if it hits the water, mass ejection is going to cover the jet stream, and it's going to cover our atmosphere in such a thick mess that the sun will take years to penetrate it, and in that time, it can become a snowball.
Absolutely, and it happens faster than you think. Vince, thanks for the call. Next up, we go to Chicago, east of the Rockies. Hey, Chris, go ahead.
Hello, George. I'd like to talk for a moment about North Korea.
All right.
Basically, I've been kind of tongue-in-cheek about them up until fairly recently. It's no secret why they're pursuing a nuclear program. That they want to be another big cog in the world wheel or just another big cheese.
Yep, they want to use their muscle.
But the thing that, this is the main reason I'm calling now, is they have really crossed the line. I found out a while ago from someone who should know that they're using children on the front lines right at the border, and where our forces and South Korean forces are patrolling it, you know, and keeping
some
separate.
Peace. Yep, yep.
Children, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, armed and shooting at our troops. And, of course, they have to shoot back according to the law, the rules of engagement. Now, these people, somebody really has to do something about them. Because
how many kids are they lining up along the border?
I really don't know. I just know that they are using children. The idea is that our forces and the South Korean forces will hesitate to shoot back at children, but their orders are to shoot anybody that shoots them. Now, this is at the instigation of the North Korean government. They need to be taken to task for this. By everybody. I mean, this is an insult to the world, to all of Asians, to all races everywhere. This is beyond cowardice, and they should be addressed along those lines. Sanctions need to be taken against them, and whatever action else.
Chris, you're absolutely right. Where can we find some more information on that? I haven't heard a lot about this at all.
I'm not really sure, but I learned this from some people who know on the inside.
So this really hasn't, okay, but it really then hasn't been disclosed yet. But if it is true, it's disgusting. Trico, let's go to you on our wild card line somewhere out there. Hey, Trico.
Hey, George, 12-year listener.
Well, thank you for supporting us so long. Great.
Hey, I just wanted to say I enjoyed the show last night, but I wondered why Bilderberg wasn't brought up, because I really think that's part of the big global conspiracy.
Well, when he talks about the elitists, I think he was including that. We didn't break it out into separate organizations,
right,
like Bilderberg's and the Council on Foreign Relations and
the
Illuminati. But I do believe he believes that's all one and the same.
All right. And then also, I just wanted to just throw a theory out there that my husband and I were discussing on our ride home while we were listening to Coast to Coast. That we were thinking that part of the economic crisis that we're experiencing now, if we had not had 9/11, that after 9/11, everybody thought they had to spend like there was no tomorrow, because there might not be a tomorrow. There might be a suitcase bomb.
Mm-hmm.
New York could blow up. So everybody sort of had post-traumatic stress disorder. So everybody just went and spent out like there was no tomorrow. But we also believe 9/11 was an inside job. And we also believe that if Bush hadn't stolen the election, that there wouldn't have been a 9/11. So that's about all I had to say. That 9/11, I really think if you want to go back to the roots of the economic crisis, I think that's where to start.
Well, in this,
the election and the stealing of the election, and then 9/11, and then Bush trying to make up for his daddy not finishing the war.
Well, and they got involved in Iraq in a big way, didn't they? What I have said about 9/11 is something that needs to be done again. When 6 out of 10 members of the 9/11 Commission don't believe it was a thorough investigation, something's wrong. And we need a new investigation. And so many people who have looked into 9/11, that's what they're asking for as well. They've got a series of new questions from folks in academia, from scientists, from physicists. We need a new investigation. We've spent and wasted so much money on these bailouts and everything else. Why don't we just spend the time and money to do a thorough investigation before it really gets too late and just do it right and answer some of these questions that some of these other people and researchers have come up with? That way we can help eliminate all the conspiracies that surround it. And I think we're entitled, as I've said it before, to a new investigation. Not because anybody believes something or doesn't, but that because the first one was not a thorough investigation. It was hasty. Let's go to Albany, New York. Karen, what's up in Albany?
Yes. Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Good, good. I was just calling to see if I could share some information that I came upon on a public website concerning H1N1.
All right. What'd you find?
I'm sorry?
What'd you find?
Well, what I found was that they did testing over a year ago on the use of elderberries. And they found out that by in vitro, they were able to take elderberry extract, and it killed the H1N1 cell right in the test tube. So they went on to do more studies where they took control groups, you know, using placebos, and did a control group and found out that the elderberry extract was successful in killing the virus in 97% of the people.
Interesting. Alternative medicine strikes again, doesn't it?
Yes. And I'll tell you, well, this is on a government website, and you can read all the studies that were done. There's quite a few of them, and all the information is there. It's a public website.
There is no doubt in my mind, Karen, that this planet has cures for just about every disease. You just got to find it, match it up. And it would not surprise me if this herb fought that kind of a flu symptom and virus. Let's go to first-time caller in Dalton. It's Dale in Dalton, Georgia. Hey, Dale. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hey, it's good talking with you. I wanted to touch on something that Greg Hewitt mentioned last night about the major corporations like Boeing, et cetera, moving overseas, and he said, and they don't even pay taxes.
Well, I don't know if he singled out Boeing as not paying taxes, but he did say a lot of major corporations don't pay taxes.
Right, a lot of corporations don't pay taxes. And it brought up a question in my mind, why? If you and I have to pay taxes. I happen to remember I gotten it off a website. It was by William Cooper, called the Cooper Files.
Yes, who's no longer with us. He was killed in a armed conflict with some sheriff deputies years ago.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
He had wrote a article about the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms /IRS criminal fraud on his, and I read in it, it said the Bureau of Internal Revenue and the alleged Internal Revenue Service were not created by Congress. These are not organizations or agencies of the Department of Treasury or of the federal government. They appear to be operated through pure trusts administered by the Secretary of Treasury, the trustee being the trustee.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that, Dale. I mean, it's like the Federal Reserve. So many people for years have thought it was part of the U.S. government, and now it's not. Well, you know, we found out years ago that it wasn't.
Exactly. And it said that the settler of the trustees and the beneficiary or beneficiaries are unknown. So, therefore, who knows?
Who
Maybe
knows?
Maybe these people are part of the trustees, the reason why they don't have to pay.
Maybe.
But he touched on several things last night that, you know, just brought to my mind that I have, you know, as he kept referring back, you know, about the voters being stupid, I'm not stupid. I sensed this for a long time, that our government is corrupt.
But most people, Dale, stick their heads in the sand, and they don't want to listen.
Exactly.
They you know, you're not unpatriotic if you question things, but so many people just don't want to hear it, and, you know, they toe the company line. And you know what? That's a very damaging way to run your life, I think.
Exactly. That is our constitutional right, the right free speech.
Absolutely. It's a right to question, exactly. the right to investigate. So many politicians, for example, won't even answer your own questions.
Well, there again, taking a line from the movie Man of the Hour, elected officials are like diapers. They should be changed frequently for the same reason.
I like that. Steve in Riverside, California, got a few minutes. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, George. Hi. I've listened to you ever since you took over. Never talked to you before, but last Friday, do you remember when he had open lines before Halloween, the guy called in about a story about he had an ex-girlfriend that was a stewardess, lived out in a house that Nick Adams had used to live in, and she was cooking him a hamburger, and she asked him if he wanted ketchup or mustard on it, and the ketchup bottle came flying across
yes.
the room.
Yes, okay. Yes.
I heard that. I listened to the show both times through the night because I'm disabled and I don't sleep very well at all, and I missed certain parts of it. I heard that story on the rerun, and I wanted to call in so bad, of course, I couldn't. My brother, about 1969, worked at a little hamburger place over in Colton, right at the interchange where Interstate 15 and 10 and 215 all meet from Vegas and Texas mm-hmm. and down to L.A., and called the Quick Bite. Anyways, it's out of business now, but the famous people used to stop in there, and Nick Adams came in there one night with his little boy. He was about 6 years old, and they got his autograph, and he ordered 8 hot dogs and a little hamburger to go with his little kid, and they were okay. sitting there eating, and he asked for a bottle of ketchup.
Don't tell me it came flying to him.
No, but they gave him a bottle of ketchup, and he started pulling the wieners out of the hot dogs, and he just put ketchup all over them, and he was eating them by themselves, which was no really big thing. His little kid started crying, and my brother went out to see what was the matter, and Nick Adams had put ketchup all over the little kid's hamburger, and he said, "Dad, I hate ketchup." Nick was drunk. I forgot to tell you that. He was pretty 3 sheets in the wind, my brother said, after they yeah. got to talking to him. And he started yelling at this kid, and he said, if nobody likes ketchup on their food, they're absolutely insane. And he started squirting ketchup all over the place.
Oh, my God. Hey, we got to run. I trust we got the gist of all of that. If not, I want to get back to you, so you make sure you send me an email, and we'll get you on another call. But I think you got it all in.